Psychology is all around us. Psychological elements can be seen throughout the lifespan, from birth until death. Films are a wonderful tool to explain psychological theory and occurrences in our lives. Characters interact within each frame of film psychological concepts. Film fosters an exploration of psychological concepts, which has the potential to expand our thoughts as to what may be possible in our lives and our relationships with others and with ourselves. I invite you to join me, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, licensed clinical psychologist and film consultant, and my guest today, filmmaker Walter Schlumman of the film Izra, may his memory be for a blessing, to discuss the best psychology in film. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the film before we get a clip?
Sure. The film is a documentary. It's a little bit over an hour, and it portrays a young man, Ezra. Ezra Weidenfeld, who was a very creative, intelligent, warm-hearted, loving kid who took his life 10 years ago. And the film is an homage to Ezra, as well as a platform for creating an awareness on the issues revolving around teen suicide and teen mental health.
Well, before we dive more in, because this is such a moving film, why don't we take a look? We'll be right back.
None of his work felt like student work. It didn't feel like you're looking at a kid's work. It felt like you're seeing art.
Play the violin as like a 12, 13-year-old. It might not seem as a really cool instrument.
Erases the line at the bottom and lowers it. That was so much Ezra, about how boundaries were only meant to be moved.
All the mountains look so different than they did on satellite, and I'm like, wait, what do you mean?
He was not a typical teenager.
He always liked to kick.
His hugs.
There was something very lovable and endearing about him, and also when he would get angry, it would be a big anger in that way too.
How do you distinguish basic teenage angst, stuff that teenagers are going through, from that?
I just had this dream that was really a nightmare.
I had the phone in my ear and I threw it on the ground.
He lied the entire time.
I felt in some crazy ways like I had killed him.
Suicide is such a taboo thing.
Everyone deals with the guilt that they face. What could they have done differently?
If people want to think, oh, why didn't Shani and Moshe see that this kid is doing self-portraits like this? Oh, I would have known he was suicidal. Well, it's just not that simple.
Had college plans, travel plans, girlfriend plans. That's one of the most confusing parts about everything.
There were so many people that helped us through this. Without them, I wouldn't be here.
Ultra disturbing piece of this story is that it just keeps happening.
So in this clip, we see really who Ezra is. And we also see that, like you mentioned, that he has a lot of talents, but also some emotional and mental health struggles. And you perform this and create this film after his death, yes?
Yeah.
How did that come about exactly?
It's funny. I'm actually friends with Ezra's parents, and I've known them while Ezra was alive. As a matter of fact, we were at their house a few days before Ezra took his life. My son was a friend of Ezra's. And the film came about many years later. I didn't know this, but Moshe, Ezra's father, had an idea about making a film to pay homage to Ezra, to remember him. And I didn't know about it, but coincidentally, a few years ago, I invited them. I was showing some films of the films that I make at the museum in New York. And they came to booked to see the film, the films in the program. And Moshe came up to me afterwards and said, we have to talk. And he told me the idea that he had had about making a film about Ezra. And then we sat down and we discussed further. And that's how it came to be.
Did you happen to know that when you began this film, that the nature of the film would be about an individual who does take their life in this sort of way and really the impact that it could have on the community?
I did not know many of the details, and I did not know the impact that it would have on me as the filmmaker, as well as the audiences that have seen it. It was difficult for me because I was personally attached. I knew Ezra, and so I already came in with with feelings about what happened. I remember I could have been a subject to be interviewed, and so it was. There were many days of editing where I was emotional, but I really tried to focus on the story. I knew after talking to Moshe, we knew we wanted to make a film that was beyond just for the family, that it would be meaningful for the greater audiences at large. And that's what I was focused on.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of that idea that despite the fact that they're experienced a loss, and you, again, also have experienced loss, you knew him, that you both are interested in making a film that could also impact more than just the family. It can impact everyone who watches this film.
I think when there's tragedy, people look for meaning and they look for a way to see some good out of such loss. And one of the ways to do that is to make others aware of what they've gone through and perhaps even help to prevent cases like this. So that, I think that was for Moshe and Shani, they needed to find a way to move forward with their lives. And a good part of the film deals with what we call survivors of suicide, that is those left behind, and how do you pick up your life after such devastating loss. And so the film addresses that as well. And the film in itself is a way that Moshe was able to come to terms on a certain level with what happened. He's a musician. And in the film, we learn that he wasn't able to play music. He couldn't touch the piano for quite a while. And he thought of making a film as a way to recover.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because one of the things that I generally talk to filmmakers about is the healing nature of film. And I ask filmmakers, do you feel that film and art heals? What would you say about it?
I would say absolutely, film can be a healer. It's interesting in this film and art as well, because Shani, Ezra's mom, is an artist. And we learn in the film that she used her art as a way for her to heal. And she, within a year, she made a show of her work, which was filled with messages about Ezra to Ezra, as well as his work, since he was an artist as well. And she had a gallery opening in New York, and there was a show with her work and Ezra's work, and that's documented in the film. So for her, it was a big part of her healing in that first year. In general, I think when you have emotional subjects, a substance filled with emotion, a film filled with emotion, I think it gets people to think and to feel and to heal. Letting go of emotions, I think, is probably a way to heal, and feeling feeling the sadness and feeling the overcoming of that, and that there is life, light and life at the end of the tunnel. I think it's all about healing.
Now, is this generally the type of film that you do create on behalf of individuals, or was this a new venture?
It's funny. A lot of, I've been in film for a long time, worked on all sorts of music videos, commercials, features in different capacities. About 10 years ago, and a little bit more than 10 years ago, I started making films about people's lives. I realized that people have remarkable lives. Ordinary people have remarkable lives. And I started a company in which we make, they're called legacy videos or video biographies. And it's documenting someone's life and showing their photographs, home videos, archival footage, music, whatever it is that really makes it look like a documentary of someone's life. And this is used often to preserve family history for their grandchildren and future generations. So those are the films that I make on a commercial basis, you know, to earn a living. And this film is kind of like a hybrid because it is a story about someone whom I know and knew, and it is about a family and how they dealt with it. And not only the family, but their surrounding circle, you know, the teachers and the friends and the relatives. But it also became an entry into a documentary that could be seen by much more than just a family. And we entered it into film festivals and won some prizes, and it was seen by a wider audience than my typical family legacy video.
Well, when we come back, I'd love to hear more about this film and really the growth that individuals have had as a result of seeing it. We'll be right back after this break.
Do you want to meet a family with a transgender kid? Here we are. Max loves to do backflips. Max loves to play his ukulele. Max loves to just be a kid and just be himself. When I found out I was pregnant, all I really wanted was a happy, healthy, whole child. And that's what I got. I think it's really important for people to know that trans kids don't have a political agenda. They are just kids. Like any parent, we love our kids unconditionally, and we will never stop fighting for them. Stand with us. Protect our families.
I didn't know it was possible to secure a fellowship at an Ivy League school, but UDC helped me achieve that. I never dreamed having this career was possible until UDC.
Find your possible. Visit udc.edu/possible to learn more.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods. Today we are speaking with Walter Schlumman regarding his film. This is a wonderful legacy film, but in addition, it actually has the opportunity to be so moving to many audiences. Walter, share with us a little bit about what it was like filming this, knowing that you also had a personal connection to the subject.
Sure. The way I went about this is I first decided on who we would interview. For example, we knew that Ezra's parents and his brother Rafi were certainly going to be primary storytellers. But then I learned about some cousins he was close to, and his music teacher and his art teacher, because Ezra was such an artist. And they had very powerful stories about him, his character. And then we decided to film, you know, the film is leading up to the 10-year anniversary commemorating his death. And so we see sporadic interspersed throughout some of the music, some playing, because at the commemoration, there's a scene where people are talking and sharing their memories of Ezra. And there's music and there's food. So that's set. That was the first day we filmed, but that ended up being sort of like the end of the film. When I started, I really didn't know how the film was going to progress. As in many documentaries, I didn't know what the beginning. I for a long time, I had a very different beginning. And then Moshe found footage of their wedding. And it starts off with this footage talking with Shani and Moshe on their wedding day, what it's going to be like in 25 years. And, you know, I get shivers when thinking about that, because he says, oh, we're going to have two kids and hopefully everything's going to be okay. And so I, you know, there's a lot of a lot of editing to make the arc of the story work, because as much as it's an important film and the topic is important, I really wanted to make sure to create interest, a dramatic interest with the story.
Well, I would definitely say you were successful. The way that it is linear and also brings you to a place of getting to know his parents and feeling hopeful, excuse me, and being able to actually craft empathy for them and with them along the way. Of, like you mentioned, these young individuals who are married and they have hopes and dreams, and then what their lives look like, and then how they're coping with that. It's just amazing how you were able to make them human within the film.
Thank you. I think that one of the things that I think as a documentary filmmaker, especially films that have a lot of interviews, I have a lot of experience interviewing people. And I think the key to that, as you know, because you have a lot of experience as well, but I think it's listening to what they have to say. And I was very lucky. I found that everybody who I interviewed, they really had such meaningful things to say. And that's what in the other work, in the other films that I do as well, I interview generally people in their 80s, 70s, 90s, and there's so much to learn from them, their life experiences. And when they're eloquent, it's just, it makes one feel like, oh, this is worth doing.
It really just takes into consideration who you are as a person, the fact that you really cherish hearing and listening to the stories that individuals have to offer, because that can change people's lives, really. And this is part of what the film, I hope, also is doing for some people, is really changing their lives, being able to hear the intimate details about a family and what they've gone through.
Absolutely. It's now, I had mentioned to you that it played in film festivals, and now it's being distributed. We think that there's an educational market there. And in terms of affecting people's lives, the film was just shown for three different nights here in Tampa, where a school showed it to the community at large one night, but then to educators and counselors and even staff, janitorial staff and maintenance staff, because anyone who's in contact with kids may become aware of what they're thinking or what they're saying, and it may bring notice to somebody who might be planning on causing harm to themselves. And then the third night was for survivors of suicide, especially those who have lost siblings or friends or parents or children to suicide. So there's a lot of effect that the film can have on audiences, both in a context of just going to see a film, but as well as an educational setting.
I would agree with you. The more people who know about suicide and what brings that about and how individuals are presenting, the better, just for preventative purposes. Is that what you're currently hoping, or and the family is currently hoping for this film right now, is more to educate the public?
Absolutely. That's yes, Shaney, the mom especially has gone around. The film was purchased by University in Montreal. Actually a psychologist who I think saw the film in the LA Psychology Festival, and she wanted to use it for upcoming therapists as in her class. And Shaney went there and spoke and gave a seminar there as well. So yes, that's the primary goal at this point, is to get it out there. As Shaney says, we're not going to prevent all suicide, just like you can't prevent all cancer. But the more you know about it, the more we talk about it, the more people are aware of it, it will certainly help the situation.
That is a very generous approach. The idea that here's this story that is very obviously personal and one that has been very painful, and to share it with other individuals in order to help people be able to either recognize or be able to prevent or intervene, it seems extraordinarily altruistic in a way. Do you feel like, as being a part of this film, that you two equally can take that as a part of who you are?
I think so. Thank you. I think there's altruism there, but I was going to say, really the courage is from Moshe and Shani, because they put themselves on the line. You know, they opened up. I don't want to give away the film, but at a certain point towards the end of the film, we find things out about Shani that come as a big surprise. And it took a lot, I think it took a lot of courage for her to speak about that in the film and to communicate her experience. And there's a lot of courage. I think, you know, altruistically, yes, for sure. If we can help people and if we can help to prevent one suicide, it would have been worth it, because I've seen the ramifications of such a, hard and harsh and horrible loss.
One thing that I noticed in the film, which was striking to me, was the idea that it's extraordinarily hard to recognize when someone is suicidal, and how difficult it is that to even be aware that someone's thinking about hurting themselves or taking their own lives. As a mental health professional, we have training to be able to think about that and think about it in a very clinical way. But for the general public, even being able to know someone on a day-to-day basis and know, like you said, what's going on in their mind is extraordinarily difficult. So I'm making this film. Do you feel like there are ways that people can say, okay, I should be worried, or I should take this into consideration from what you've learned making this?
From what I've learned, and I'm for sure not an expert on mental health, but I think that from what I've learned, I think just the consciousness, you know, the child is expressing themselves in a way that you think might be harmful or might trigger something, or if they say, I don't want to live and things like that, it's definitely something to be aware of and to maybe talk to a therapist and talk to a counselor. I mean, I think, you know, listen, nobody knows. And if somebody really wants to take their life, I think it's going to happen. It's a harsh reality. But but there are many, many different ways of dealing with that in terms of medications and therapy. And I think, you know, after COVID, I mean, the problem has just exacerbated. And I think we all have to recognize that the teenagers and young children are going through a lot of mental issues. And we just have to be helpful and aware and seek professional help when we think that there might be even a slight chance that they're suicidal.
It almost sounds like what you've gathered and through this experience is that if you see something, intervene. If you hear something, intervene. Even if you're wrong, it's better to intervene and to ask about it, to talk about it, to inquire, to really be able to get a sense as to where that person is. Now, they may or may not tell you the truth. Like you said, if they're really committed to hurting themselves, there's nothing maybe you can do about that. But being curious and being there to be supportive is worth doing that than not saying anything, it sounds.
For sure. And recognizing that there are mental health issues that kids have, and that there's nothing wrong with seeking professional help. There's a stigma around, going to a therapist or having mental health issues. And that's one of the things we try to bring out in the film as well, that it's a disease like any other disease, like cancer, like high blood pressure. And there are ways to treat it. Suicide is a wide field. There are many different reasons why people are suicidal, ranging from like feeling all of a sudden, especially with teens, feeling all of a sudden like they want to take their life, and it's very impromptu, to having long history of mental health issues and many things in between. So there's no formula, but I think the more we are aware and destigmatize mental health and suicide, the better we will be.
This film, again, when I say it's a moving film, I feel like one of the things that happened to me while I was watching this is that I wanted to know him, like personally wanted to know him, based upon how many things people were saying and their experiences of him. It just seemed like such an honor to know him. People, like when they describe just being in his presence, how he moved them. And so we do get a glimpse as to what it may have been like to know Israel in that way. And so then when you learn that he did take his own life, there is a grief that comes from that knowledge, even for people who haven't seen him, because of how you were able to capture who he was to other people. And I guess I wondered when I was watching this, is as a filmmaker, are you interested in capturing the human condition like this always, making it feel like the viewer is a person who actually knows this person through these legacy films?
Dr. Woods, that's exactly what I was trying to do. I'm glad you got that, because I really felt that the story needed to have an emotional attachment. The audience needed to feel what the parents felt, you know, on a certain level, but certainly to get to know Ezra, because I think getting to know Ezra would connect you. And as you mentioned, there are many people who say many things, some comedic things, some more serious things. But the thing that was missing from the films that I usually do is I usually interview the subject. You know, I usually interview somebody who's their life story. Here, we didn't have Ezra to be interviewed, but luckily, fortunately, we had his writings, his art, and his music. The soundtrack of the film is 95% Ezra's music, whether he's playing or composed it. So Ezra is very much there, and even the people who knew him, you know, might not have heard his music, but might not have seen all his artwork. So there's a lot of Ezra there, and certainly getting other people to talk about him was the goal, so that we can really try to understand who he was, what he went through, and the ramifications of his act.
Well, I know we're all out of time. Unfortunately, this certainly has gone by way too fast. Tell us a little bit about how we can see the movie and how people can get in contact with you even.
Sure. The movie, we have a website, and it's called Ezra'sFilm.com. And we also we're on Facebook, and you'll see a lot of comments and a lot of stories about mental health and teen suicide in general, and a lot about Ezra. That's Facebook. That's Ezra/EzraDoc on Facebook. You can also visit my company is Heritage Media Group, and our website is WeConnectGenerations.com. And the trailer is on there, as well as some of my other works. So that's WeConnectGenerations.com.
Again, if one individual can be saved, and or if one individual can be intervened with because of this film, it certainly has done its job in a very beautiful artistic way.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on. I'll see you next time on Best Psychology in Film.